الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the Creator and the Sustainer of the Universe, I greet you with the greetings of all of the prophets, from Adam to Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. I'm your host, Muhammad Rashid. Today is our ninth program in the series on Muslim beliefs, and in today's program we'll talk about the Day of Judgment. I have as my guest on the program Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Welcome to Islam in Focus, Dr. Jamal. Last week in our program, we had a very interesting discussion on the soul. We were talking about the contact of the soul with the living, the contact of the souls among themselves, and we touched on the question of reincarnation, and we just got into, I just had a chance to talk a bit about today's topic. Mm-hmm. I wonder if perhaps you could summarize the main points of our discussion last time.
Certainly. We thought first that according to the Quran, especially in chapter 39, verse 42, there is an allusion there to the fact that the souls of the dead and the living could possibly meet during the sleep, and then God would send the souls of those who are still to live further, and then keeps away the souls of the of those who have died, or those who died during their sleep. We also indicated that the whole issue of seance is shrouded with lots of mystery and superstitious, and that from the Muslim perspective, he approached that with a great deal of caution, mm-hmm. because the souls of people are not just like toys in the hands of people who claim to invoke or get those souls, and the incidents of fake kind of exercises which depend on darkness, sounds, and things to impress people. But souls are not just subject to playful people or just trying to call on them at any time. We also mentioned that there are references in the saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that the souls of those who are dead also meet among each other. They meet and visit each other the same way that they do in this life, or the living people do. There was a question about where the souls go after death. And then we indicated that there are sayings of the Prophet which give a clear indication that these souls would be in paradise. But we find also references that gives the impression that these souls also would be connected with earth. And we said that there is no contradiction between both, and we gave the similitude used by Ibn al-Qayyim. It's just like the sun and its rays. The sun is up there, and the rays is still connected or felt on earth. There could be an impact also of the soul. It's not really something that's material that can be limited to one particular area. But the main thing that we indicate is that in any case, that the souls of those who are good and righteous would be in a state of felicity and enjoyment. The souls of those who are wicked and unbelievers would be in a state of suffering. There was a question on the reincarnation, like you mentioned earlier, and you said that the Muslim does not believe in reincarnation whatsoever in any shape or form, that souls are created in the womb and survive until the Day of Judgment and thereafter. It's almost like eternal existence after being created. There was a question about the three states of the soul according to the Quran. The soul that pushes us towards evil, the soul that is self-reproaching, conscious of the individual, and then finally the soul in perfect peace and tranquility, which is the ultimate state to which people really should strive. And the last question that was raised as to whether resurrection would be both in body and soul, or just by soul, and we indicated that the Quran always indicates that the resurrection would be both in body and soul. And I quoted a verse from the Quran in chapter 56, particularly in verse 60 on, that God is able to raise us in physical body, but different from the physical body as we know it today. So it need not necessarily be exactly the same physical existence, but it is both physical and spiritual.
Now, I'd like to take right off on your last point, where you say that the will be a combination of both the physical body and the soul.
Right.
Does the Quran, how would the Quran respond to people who would make the point that, would raise the question, how can our bodies come back to life after they are totally decomposed in the graves? We all know that the physical bodies that we have in this creation, when we die, they cease to exist.
Exactly.
So, does the Quran have anything to say about that?
Oh, yes. In fact, this is not a new argument, really. It has been raised in the past by many people who rejected God. In fact, the Quran makes a reference to that, for example, in chapter 45, in verses 34 through 36. It quotes those unbelievers as saying that it is only our earthly life here that we live. We live and die, and nothing really destroys us but time. But the Quran makes rebuttal of this kind of argument, saying that those people are saying that out of conjecture, not because of any certain knowledge that they have. They simply guess that because people live and die, that's the end of it. But they have no way of proving that there is nothing beyond this particular. They're just making conjecture. As far as the specific responses trying to explain to mankind why their return is not that hard thing to imagine, we find beautiful examples in the Quran. Let me just quote a few of them. In chapter 36 in the Quran, verses 77 through 79, it describes people who made this argument in these terms. It says, does not man or mankind see that it is we, that is God, who created him from a sperm, yet behold, he is an open adversary. And he, that's mankind, makes comparisons for us and forgets his own creation. Forgets his own creation. He says, who can give life to the bones when they are decomposed? Say, he, that's God, will give them life who created them in the first time or the first place. For he is well versed with every kind of creation. In other words, what people tend to ignore when they think about resurrection and the day of judgment is their original creation, how we were created to start with, from a microscopic sperm and an ovum or fertilized ovum. That in itself is a miracle. The fact that we are created from that very microscopic thing is in itself an evidence and clarification that he who created this is able to return us to life again. Not only this, we find that the Quran even appeals to our limited understanding by showing us that to return something is easier than creating it to start with. We find that, for example, in chapter 50, verse 15, where God says, were we then weary with the first creation, that they should be in confused doubt about resurrection? That God did not get tired from original creation, and as you indicated in previous program, God does not need any rest. He does not really feel that any activity or any decisions or action that he makes requires any rest. Not only this, it's put even in a more clear term in chapter 30, verses 27 and 28, when God there says, it is he who begins the creation, then returns it, return that creation at the day of judgment. And for him, it is most easy. This is one. In addition to that, another aspect, if I may continue this, makes an analogy between giving life to the barren earth and giving life to this decomposed bones and graves. The analogy is very significant because if you look at the earth when it's burned in the grip of winter or drought, you never expect that any beautiful vegetation or plantation is going ever to arise out of that land. But when the water falls on that land and the circumstances are ripe, then you find all kind of lovely creation. We find example of this, for example, in chapter 41, verse 39, when it says that when you see the earth barren, but when we send water, it thrives and bursts forth with all kind of lively type of creation. And then it says, whoever gave life to this earth after death is also able to give life to humans after death. The same thing is repeated also, for example, in chapter 22, verse 5, repeating again the same analogy of plantation and resurrection from the dead.
Last time when we were talking about the soul, we learned of the differing fate, so to speak, of the righteous and the unrighteous. On this question of resurrection, how about those who suggest that only the righteous are going to be resurrected and that the wicked will not be resurrected again? Is this correct?
Well, from the Muslim perspective, this is contrary to the Quran and contrary to justice also. It's contrary to the Quran because we have indicated before that the resurrection, and this will be shown also as the program continues today, for example, that everybody would be resurrected, whether believer or wicked, because everybody has to be recompensed for his life on earth, for his deeds. It is also contrary to justice, because if you say that the punishment for the wicked is simply that he will not or she will not resurrect, then you will find many people who say, all right, let me enjoy myself in this life. I don't care to be resurrected again. I'm more interested in the short-sighted pleasures that I could obtain or enjoy. So there's no motive really to be good. And on the other hand, it's also contrary to justice, because if somebody conducts a life of wickedness, of crime, of really hurting other human beings, with all these evil deeds, it is not enough recompensation for him to simply let him die and not rise again. So it is the wisdom of God that everybody will be brought before him for this accountability. Both positive and negative deeds are covered. Just to give a documentation, one or two citations from the Quran. In chapter 36, for example, in verse 12, it says, verily, we shall give life to the dead, and we record all that they sent before, or all that they have done before, and that they leave behind, and we have taken account of all what they did in a clear book, that is a clear book of evidence, which includes, of course, both positive and negative. Also in chapter 39, in verse 70, وَوُفِّيَتْ كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَا عَمِلَتْ, that in the day of judgment, and to every soul will be paid in full the fruits of its deeds, and he, that God, knows best all that they do. So the rudimentary principle of justice requires that everybody would be resurrected, just like everybody would have to find out the results of his tests. So the life here is the test. Everybody would be brought forth to get the results and the consequences of this life.
I'm sure many of the people watching the program are anxious to know if there's any indication in the Quran as to when the day of judgment will come. And this is something that people have been speculating, oftentimes speculated about. Is there any...
You hear a great deal, you know, about people, for example, coming up with all kind of thoughts. I think it was in the 50s when some people thought that the Day of Judgment is going to take place on X day.
Yes.
And they determined the particular year and
yes.
hour even.
Right.
No, there is no such thing with this kind of definitiveness about the coming of the Day of Judgment. The Quran is very clear that the knowledge of the hour is only in the hands of God, not in the hands of any other human being. One verse we cited in a previous program in chapter 31, verse 34. إِنَّ اللَّهَ عِنْدَهُ عِلْمُ السَّاعَةِ, that is, with God alone lies the knowledge of the hour. In another verse, which is very similar also, إِلَيْهِ يُرَدُّ عِلْمُ السَّاعَةِ, that's in chapter 41, verse 47. Unto God is the knowledge, with God is the knowledge of the hour. There is indication, however, that the hour would come suddenly, at least in the specific hour, the specific day, would be a sudden, something that nobody would have expected. This we find documented in more than one place in the Quran, for example, in chapter 7, verse 187, mentioned that. In one of the sayings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he even described the suddenness of the coming of the hour, that people would be selling each other, for example, material or clothes, and the hour would come before they fulfilled their contract or their transaction. A person would be milking his goat or whatever, and he would not be able even to carry it through to the end. A person would be holding a morsel of bread, and it would not reach his mouth, and the day of judgment could happen. So the main issue then about the exact coming of the hour is that one should not simply busy himself talking about exact hour or exact day, but rather take the lesson as to how one could prepare for that hour. Let me quote you from the Quran kind of attitude that it implants in the Muslim. That appears in chapter 79. Right. In verse 42 on, it says, they ask you, O Muhammad, about the hour. When will it be? It's appointed time. Wherein are you concerned with the declaration thereof? With your Lord is the limit fixed, therefore. You are, that is you, Muhammad, are but a warner for such as fear it. So the main message really is for those who worry about that hour, not the exact time. Mm-hmm. The day they see it, it will be as if they had tarried or lived but a single evening, or at most till the following morning. That is, it will come sooner or later, that when it comes, most of us, or all of us really, would feel that this entire life, 50 years, 100 years, whatever we lived on this earth, would appear to us as just an evening. In one verse in the Quran, it says, the whole life would appear as 1 hour in our eyes, as if we just took a nap and woke up again.
Well, now, even if it's not possible to be able to specify an exact time in which the world will end, surely there must be some indications or some signs of the approaching of the Day of Judgment.
Right. Yeah, there are signs, but it varies, of course. There are signs which the Muslim jurists call al-alamat al-sughra, or the minor signs, which could extend over years, over hundreds of years even. And then there are the major signs, that is when the Day of Judgment is imminent, that is within a few years. And then there are the description of actually what happens when the Day of Judgment starts. When we talk about signs of approaching, we have to keep in mind also that it is relative. For example, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, once was quoted as saying that I was sent, that's as a prophet, and the difference between my coming and the hour is like this, and he pointed with his fingers, that it's too close. And now we know that he died for almost 1400 years now. So again, we're talking about relative closeness, because again, if you talk about hundreds of years or even thousands of years compared to the age of the earth or the age of human life even on earth, it really becomes very minuscule, it's very trivial, very small. So we have to keep in mind this. But when you talk about approaching, like I said, you can look at it at least in terms of rough signs of the coming. Taking the minor signs, there are too many of them. I don't know which one you want to start with. There are signs relating to the state of technology. There are signs relating to the state of economy. Signs that relate to the spread of certain diseases. There are signs that relate to the change in moral standards on individual and social level. There are all kinds, even and just in the minor signs of the Day of Judgment, all kinds.
Well, perhaps we could take some of the minor signs that you referred to, perhaps beginning with the technology. Are there, or is there, or what is the relationship between technology in the approaching of the day of judgment. The day of judgment.
Okay.
I kind of twisted that there.
Okay. Well, what we have to keep in mind is that when we talk about technology and the approaching of the day of judgment, we should not imply from this that technology in itself is bad, or that the fact that there will be certain inventions, that this in itself is a negative thing. The attitude of the Muslim towards science and technology is quite often, the Quran urges the Muslim to learn and to use technology and science in a fruitful way to the benefit of humanity at large. Mm-hmm. But there are very interesting prophecies that were made by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, 1400 years ago, and when you look at it in terms of today's achievement, it is very surprising how they resembled what happened. First of all, in one of the to start even before hadith, from the Quran itself, the Quran indicates in chapter 10, verse 24, that when the earth becomes so much adorned, that is, so much advanced, and the people who are living on this earth become a little bit arrogant, they think that they can do anything they want, that they really have a great deal of scientific or technological power, that this would be a sign that the hour could come at any time. So in a sense, the Quran describes that. But again, not looking at technology as a negative thing, but this would be one of the things that would lead people to deviate more from the path of God, to be overly materialistic, mm-hmm. because being so proud of that technology. Not that technology is bad. In addition to that, I was just starting to mention some of the saying of Prophet Muhammad about this. For example, in a hadith narrated in At-Tabarani, he said that there will be so many strange and amazing things that will take place before the Day of Judgment in terms of invention, something that's addressing people that you've never heard of or could imagine. More specifically, there were specific prophecies narrated, for example, in the collections of hadith or saying of the Prophet by Muslim, Ahmad, Al-Hakim, and At-Tabarani. All of them point out to the fact that there will be a great development in the means of communication, and particularly transportation. Mm-hmm. For example, the Prophet said that the camels will no longer be used as means of transportation. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, that there will be some other means, which means if it's not animal, then it must be something else. Mm-hmm. More specifically, in one saying, he said that people would ride on things that look like saddles, but not saddles. Now, when you talk about saddles, you're talking about things that you can put on horses. And he said it is not saddles, which means that there will be something that resembles the saddle, but it's not really put on an animal. Is that possibly an indication of the car seat? You're going to say that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Looks like a saddle,
yeah.
Just but fixed on metal instead of on a horse or camel. He also mentioned that when the false Messiah comes, he will be traveling at a speed that's similar to the speed of the clouds. Think now of missiles and jet airplanes and so on.
Right.
More specifically even, he says that the earth will become smaller, that the distances become very short. That was narrated, for example, in At-Tabarani. So from all of this, said 1400 years ago, it appears very much in line with what really foretold what actually took place hundreds of years later. One of the things that we can't fully understand now, that he said that animals will be talking, or will talk to the humans. Whether he meant by that talking literally, which it's quite possible, Prophet Solomon could communicate with the ants and other animals, or whether that might be also a reference or allegory of the fact that animals will be able to communicate with the human beings, like the police dogs,
mm-hmm.
you know, the animals in the circus, for example, where they learn actually to communicate and listen and receive commands from humans, we don't really know. But another thing that's very interesting, that it was narrated also that the Prophet said that the inanimate objects would be speaking. More specifically, even he says in one hadith that, for example, a person's whip or shoes will talk, which could also be an allegory of objects, material objects speaking. And you think today about what? Radios?
Yes.
TV.
Yes, TV, yes.
The spying equipment whereby right. you can listen to what's going on at home or whatever, right. if you have this right. Electronic devices.
Right.
So in all of that, I find that this is particularly interesting, but I wanted to emphasize again what I said earlier. It doesn't mean that this technology itself is bad. It could be used for good or evil, but it simply shows it as a sign, not as a cause, as a sign of the approaching of the Day of Judgment. And I really get fascinated with the accurate and very meticulous description of what right. took place years later.
In fact, we probably could spend the whole program just talking on this particular aspect, but I'd like to raise another point. You made reference in passing about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
What about the signs in the economy and the economic life which might give us a clue? How are they related?
There are quite a few points I can mention, a few of them quite briefly. For example, in At-Tabarani, it was narrated that the Prophet said that lots of metals or wealth would be discovered, and the people who would be controlling that would be among the most unscrupulous people. Again, whether that has been realized or will be realized in the future, I don't know. He talked also in another hadith in Nasa'i and Ahmad about the expansion of trade and the participation of women in this progress. In another hadith in Abu Dawood, for example, he talked about the spread of usury, or interest as we call it today in modern terms, to the point that it becomes so spread that everybody would have some effects of that usury on him. Of course, you could look today in terms of all this credit, creation of credit through banks and all that, the use of interest charge cards and all that. He talked also about the fact that some of the spots on earth which were desolate will have lots of construction, and areas that already had construction before or had buildings would be deserted. And sometimes I wonder in my own mind about what's going today in terms of building of suburbs, leaving downtown areas, building new cities, other cities dying. He also mentioned something very fascinating about people who used to be ship herders, building skyscrapers, or building, as the hadith called, buildings that are very high, almost getting into the sky. And I wonder what's going on today again in the Gulf area, for example, people who really were ship herders now building skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it does not mean that only in Arabia, but talks in general about the spread of these high buildings. In general, there's mention also about the spread of luxury in houses. Of course, as you compare it with houses in the past, the spread of the use of fine material, symbolized by the use of silk. And as one saying of the Prophet put it, that there would be lots of progress in the material part, but lots of desolation and destruction in terms of the hearts. Materialism and decline in the moral consciousness of people.
We have less than 2 minutes, I believe, left on today's program. I just wonder if perhaps we might use that time to touch on the question of health conditions. We may not have a chance to finish in today's program. If not, we can come back next week perhaps and continue it.
I can try to put it in a brief way. One of the things that are very clear from the saying of the Prophet is the spread of drinking. But in another hadith, he made also a prophecy about the spread of other things that does to the body the same thing that drinking does,
mm-hmm.
like drugs.
Mm-hmm.
For example, he said some people will be intoxicated in the later days, or the exact terms, drink wine, but of course wine in Islam or khamr also means something that declouds the mind, doesn't have to be something to be drunk. And people will call it in different names, which to me seemed to be an indication of drugs and other things. He also talked in a number of sayings about the spread of serious diseases, either diseases that were not known before or were not widespread before. And now the question arises with respect to the VD, for example, the spread of cancer much more than any other time. And finally, something really interesting, that he described even one of the diseases that would be very common, and that is to die suddenly, which could also be a reference to
heart attacks.
Heart attacks.
For instance, yes. Well, we'll have to close it off at that point. I'd like to invite everybody back next week when we'll continue our discussion along these lines. We'll continue our discussion of the Day of Judgment and what will happen on that particular day. That's our program for today. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be upon you.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.